Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. I'm David Reed. This is Merrick Larwood.
Hello there.
And we are doing short podcasts for the summertime.
These are our pre-recorded summer podcasts. But don't worry, when September rolls around, we'll be going to seeing new releases again. All the top films. So you think, why are we not talking about Alpha Papa and stuff like that? It's because this is pre-recorded.
It's not out yet. There's nothing we can do about that. We will catch up with stuff and we will watch new films. Cinema is alive and well.
It's just we are trapped in the past.
Hey, there's a film.
Yeah, I'm reading a good book actually, a good Stephen King book.
What is it?
It's called
Under the Dome.
No, it's the date of Kennedy's assassination. It's about time travel. Oh. I love Stephen King.
He's written a lot of books that have made films, haven't he?
Well, he has written a lot of. Every now and then, he writes some rubbish books. And you forget how good he is.
Yeah.
He needs to die to be recognised for how good he is. But I love some of his.
Yeah, come on, Stephen. Die already.
One of my favourite Stephen King stories is one called The Long Walk. Which is when have I ever mentioned this before?
No.
Which is when he was writing as Richard Bachman.
Mm.
James Bachman's older brother.
That's right. More successful older brother.
And he wrote The Running Man and Shawshank Redemption.
Running Man's my favourite, I think.
Yeah, I haven't read that, but I read this story. It's about these people when they're 18, they just suddenly go all from different states in America, just start this walk. One, and then if they go under a certain pace, they get shot, and only one is left.
Wow.
And it sounds like a pretty
bleak.
If I was writing it would be rubbish, as you can tell by the way.
You go, yeah, I'll work on it.
I've got a stone in my shoe. That's what happened.
Do you think Stephen King writes books with at least one eye on the fact that someone might pay him to turn it into a film?
I don't think he cares anymore.
Okay. Do you think he ever did do that?
He must love writing because he must be so rich.
Yeah. This the Dan Brown thing, because there's a guy who clearly writes for to have someone buy the books off him. Because apparently, I've not read any of Dan Brown's books, but I've been told that he has the character description of Tom Hanks's character in that. Is just go, people often remarked he looked quite like Harrison Ford.
I think that Dan Brown is a computer.
Really?
It's a name a computer would call itself, Dan True. Brown. And I start reading his Da Vinci Code, possibly one of the worst written books I've ever read in my life.
And you think, okay, I think it's the biggest conspiracy of all.
He is a computer.
Wow. And so is the Pope.
The Pope is a computer. Who are the famous people? Nicki Minaj is a computer.
God, it goes all the way up. All the way, if you follow the rabbit hole, it goes all the way to the president.
Bradley Cooper's a...
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. I'm David Reed. This is Merrick Larwood.
Hello there.
And we are doing short podcasts for the summertime.
These are our pre-recorded summer podcasts. But don't worry, when September rolls round, we'll be going to seeing new releases again. All the top films. So you think, why are we not talking about Alpha Papa and stuff like that? It's because this is pre-recorded.
It's not out yet. There's nothing we can do about that. We will catch up with stuff and we will watch new films. Cinema is alive and well.
It's just we are trapped in the past.
Hey, there's a film.
Yeah, I'm reading a good book actually, a good Stephen King book.
What is it?
It's called... It's
Under the Dome.
No, it's the date of Kennedy's assassination. It's about time travel. Oh. I love Stephen King.
He's written a lot of books that have made films, hasn't he?
Well, he has written a lot of... Every now and then, he writes some rubbish books. And you forget how good he is.
Yeah.
He needs to die to be recognised for how good he is. But I love some of his...
Yeah, come on, Stephen. Die already.
One of my favourite Stephen King stories is one called The Long Walk. Which is when Richard... Have I ever mentioned this before?
No.
Which is when he was writing as Richard Bachman.
Mm.
James Bachman's older brother.
That's right. More successful older brother.
And he wrote The Running Man and Shawshank Redemption.
Running Man's my favourite, I think.
Yeah. I haven't read that, but I read this story. It's about these people when they're 18. They just suddenly go all from different states in America, just start this walk. One, and then if they go under a certain pace, they get shot and only one is left.
Wow.
And it sounds like a pretty...
bleak.
If I was writing it, it would be rubbish, as you can tell by the way.
You go, yeah, I'll work on it.
I've got a stone in my shoe. That's what happened.
Do you think Stephen King writes books with at least one eye on the fact that someone might pay him to turn it into a film?
I don't think he cares anymore.
Okay. Do you think he ever did do that?
He must love writing because he must be so rich.
Yeah. This the Dan Brown thing, because there's a guy who clearly writes for to have someone buy the books off him. Because apparently, I've not read any of Dan Brown's books, but I've been told that he has the character description of Tom Hanks's character in that is just go. People often remarked he looked quite like Harrison Ford.
I think that Dan Brown is a computer.
Really,
it's a name a computer would call itself, Dan True. Brown. And I start reading. His Da Vinci Code, possibly one of the worst written books I've ever read in my life.
And you think, okay, that would I think it's the biggest conspiracy of all.
He is a computer.
Wow. And is the Pope.
The Pope is a computer. The who are the famous people? Nicki Minaj is a computer.
God, it goes all the way up. All the way, if you follow the rabbit hole, it goes all the way to the president.
Bradley Cooper's a mobile phone.
I can believe that, though. I can believe he's a mobile phone. Rusty Lee is a Tamagotchi.
Yeah. Russell Crowe is a broken burglar alarm. And this sort of is turning into one of these conspiracy podcasts.
It is.
You ever listen to a conspiracy podcast?
No.
There's one, it's pretty crazy.
Only one.
I listen to a few.
All the others are very reasonable.
All the others are real. I listen to a few. Anyway, let's not talk about now. Okay, okay. Let's talk about films.
We watched a film this week, and that film was readily available on YouTube. It's called The Day After, which is an American film from, what year was it?
80-something. When did you watch The Day After?
Last night.
Yesterday.
Yeah, this is The Day After.
So you are talking about The Day After.
The Day After.
Which is the perfect time to discuss
conspiracy! 1983. But it's about nuclear fallout in the area around Kansas. After there is a mutually assured destruction strike of America versus the Soviets, and they just launch nukes at each other, and it's aftermath. It's what happens. It's very, very reminiscent, and it's been said before to Threads, which came out the year after in Britain, but was not a remake of it.
Actually. So I was surprised. I assumed
they're so similar.
Yeah.
Even in what they end with, actually, the image they end with is almost identical, with one subtle difference. But from what I've read, the limited amount I've read is that The Day After came out first, but Threads was already in production before The Day After came out. So they are one of those concurrent idea things.
This was the height of the second wave of nuclear paranoia wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember that?
No, I don't. I mean, I was 1 year old in 1983.
So. Oh. I was 7.
Wow.
So I was fully versed...
In on fear.
And on nuclear warfare. We did... that was one of the subjects of school.
It was, wasn't it?
Maths, English, PE...
Nuclear warfare.
Yes.
And then double chemistry.
Geography.
Geography, yeah. It's Now, the day after. So, it's, weirdly, it stars Steve Guttenberg and John Lithgow, but it's exactly the same as Threads. It follows the pockets of people in different areas, so you can see sort of the broad spectrum of what happens to society in a nuclear fallout. It's not about one person in particular.
What is the most interesting thing about talking about this film, and it's a good film, but Threads is... We talked about this before, I think it's been a recurring film, is the bleakest film I've ever seen, and one, the most harrowing film I've ever seen, eh?
Yes.
And last, stays with you, and is so powerful that it makes you actually want to go out and protest against any nuclear...
Yes.
It's that, I don't think a film's had that much of an effect on me as Threads.
No, it's so relevant as well as bleak, you know.
Mm.
People have mentioned The Road as being one of the bleakest films, but unnecessarily bleak films they've
not
ever seen.
But Threads, I think, had a huge effect on people at the time, and everyone was talking about it.
Well, it's also done in a documentary style, Threads, whereas The Day After isn't. So it makes it even more sort of possible. And it doesn't relent either. Threads is as bleak as it would be. It doesn't then have its happy ending after.
That's what's interesting. I think the objective of The Day After, and it says at the end, we hope this would, you know, this
discourage, mutually assured destruction. Yeah,
but it still can't. Here comes Buddy.
Hello,
you've come
Buddy.
Back from his walk.
Yeah.
There's been no nuclear warfare. I can report. from Buddy's happy demeanour.
Yes, he does not. He's got all of his own hair.
Yeah. they even though it's trying to be a film to discourage nuclear warfare in quite a strong way, it still can't escape from the conventions of American
films. American films. It can't. It has to give it a happy ending. It has to show that hope will always out. And it has to show that it'll be all right in the end. And people are at their heart good, aren't they?
And even when their characters are suffering from radiation poisoning and essentially dying, it isn't as bleak as it can be.
No.
It's like it's a struggle within itself to not have, you know...
There's even a moment of a girl is going a bit stir-crazy in the shelter and runs outside, and Steve Guttenberg chases her. And it's the farmyard is all covered in ash. And it's almost shot like... It's quite beautiful, isn't it? It's almost like they're frolicking in blossoms.
Yes, and
it's like
snow. A quiet snowy scene, except the fact that all the cattle are dead.
Yeah.
If they were sleeping covered in snow, it would be fine.
Yeah.
You cannot escape talking about this film, and someone's written, like Ben Hyten, I think, wrote on our Facebook page, just watch Threads. That's it, just watch Threads.
Yeah.
I think it's like one of those things with an advert for another film.
It is a fascinating thing just to get a sense for the intrinsic difference between American and British attitudes, though. I think it is quite endemic of the difference.
Yeah, I think that cynicism and the lack of positivity.
Yeah,
that is. Yeah,
or realism. It's
yeah,
you know,
maybe. I think. Well, I think if you go when I've been to the States, there has been a sort of positive feel to it. I mean, it's like New York, Buffalo, Detroit, around there. Even those places have had some positivity.
Yes.
That's a part of American people's makeup that just is not there.
Yeah.
In the cynicism of the British.
Yes. But as a result, I think for this, not all, but for this subject matter, I think Threads feels more real. It feels more appropriate. There's times when I really felt like I was watching a TV movie with The Day After.
Yeah, I think
because they both are TV movies.
Yeah, nuclear war is so brutal and random, and in the American version, you thought you sort of knew, they had picked out the main characters and they were survivors and they weren't. It felt like you were following arcs of different stories when you're in it. You're not in nuclear war. In the British one, you're just like, oh, you're just dead. That's what happens. You can be a fully formed character, but you're dead.
Yeah.
You can be this, and it's so shocking to have, because your brain's not used to having that suddenly just full stop put in the middle of a sentence almost, that it is, does hit you harder. And the other characters you think aren't going to survive. Fred is great because it gives you real, they both show about half an hour or more than that of these normal lives.
Yes.
So you're just stuck in, especially in Threads, you it feels like a normal program. So the shock of nuclear war is all that more real.
Yes. I tell you what The Day After does that Threads didn't, that I thought was a haunting image, it was really good, was the scenes of pastoral domesticity and suburbia with their own rockets being launched into the sky, because these silos are near their farms and near their homes.
Yeah.
You know, it's just part of the landscape. And all of these rockets heading over and what they knew that meant inevitably.
Yeah.
But it's such a sort of slow image as well of just like these plumes of smoke rising into the sky.
Buddy's doing some breakdancing.
Shall I?
That's what he would do if there was a nuclear war. Breakdancing. So watch both of them, but nonetheless, it is still a good film.
Absolutely. You know, Threads, if you're only going to watch one depressing nuclear fallout film, then watch Threads. But for completionist's sake, I think it's fascinating to watch The Day After as well. There's a really good quote from, I was reading, it's on the Wikipedia page, but from Carl Sagan. After the original broadcast of The Day After on American television, they actually had a debate about nuclear arms with Carl Sagan on one side and who's the other guy? William F. Buckley Jr., who was a conservative writer.
He was pro, but
he was pro, yeah. But it famously... famously, Sagan described the arms race in this way, which I just thought was great, which was, imagine a room awash with gasoline, and there are two implacable enemies in that room. One of them has 9,000 matches, the other 7,000 matches. Each of them is concerned about who's ahead, who's stronger. And he's absolutely right. Like,
yeah.
There's a line in The Day After where I just went, blimey neck, where in the early warning system that's being manned, they just go, 300 warheads are heading our way. It's 300 of them.
Mm.
It is still a terrifying concept. I mean,
it's like biggest TV thing, isn't it?
Hey?
Who's got the biggest TV?
Yeah. I mean, does it matter? They're all showing crap.
That does matter, actually.
Does it?
I think, actually, that's a bit different.
Yeah, you haven't thought it through. Quite.
It's a little bit similar, but it's not similar.
In a, you know, smaller and bigger way, but nothing much beyond that.
There's no death toll.
No. No.
Talking about death tolls.
Yes.
No, I'm
no, you can't
seven.
Segue that way.
We've got another 1 minute review.
We do. Thank you for sending in your 1 minute reviews. Please do send in more of them as well.
This isn't just a talking one, though. Someone's only written a blooming song.
Oh my God, the bar just got raised.
Yeah. This LT Jones, who is at Twitter, at Lord Tooth. And he's got a blog where he's blogging a novel one chapter at a time. I'm doing this because he's just put so much effort into it, which is lordtooth.wordpress.com. So read his novel and follow him because he's watched a film.
Good man. He's gone to see The Wolverine. So here is Lord Tooth's 1 minute review.
Sing it, baby.
Well, there's lots of fun with old Logan running around that there Japan. There's vicious hordes with samurai swords trying to fight that metal bone man. There's thrills and spills and planes and trains and excellent set pieces. But the problem with the film is the story's like trying to write a tale about Jesus. He's invulnerable and immortal. They have the manufactured Jeopardy, and it's not as if the Wolverine is known for witty repartee. Some of the dialogue is quite bad. There's a good sidekick and an evil prick and a morally dubious loner. Some great effects, a hint of sex, but we don't see Jacqueline's boner. There's a lack of resolution to the narrative arc, and plot points seem quite forced. And spoiler alert, in the last 5 minutes, old Wolvie loses his claws. It quickly becomes predictable, like the fights on the bullet train Shinkansen. And without a doubt, my favourite parts are the bits with Famke Janssen. I give it 6 teeth.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Thank you very much. And did you say where you could send our reviews to?
No, I haven't yet. But you can send them to dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. Or if you want to commit less than doing a 1 minute recorded review, then why not just talk to us on our Facebook wall /filmfandango? That's right, buddy. Or tweet us at filmfandango. Or if you would like to contribute towards our running costs, because we do this all for free, then go to filmfandango.co.uk. And for everyone who's already donated, thank you very much. It's all deeply appreciated.
That's about it, isn't it?
Buddy is still going crazy over in the corner.
He's doing some amazing breakdancing.
It's phenomenal. I didn't know a dog could rotate on just on its nose like that.
It's incredible to watch.
Yeah, if only we had a camera.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Keep watching the film.
Keep watching the film. Bye.
Bye. Killer fallout in the area around Kansas. After there is a mutually assured destruction strike of America versus the Soviets, and they just launch nukes at each other, and it's aftermath. It's what happens. It's very, very reminiscent, and it's been said before, to Threads, which came out the year after in Britain, but was not a remake of it.
So I was surprised. I assumed
they're so similar.
Yeah.
Even in what they end with, actually, the image they end with is almost identical, with one subtle difference. But from what I've read, the limited amount I've read is that The Day After came out first, but Threads was already in production before The Day After came out. So they are one of those concurrent idea things.
This was at the height of like the second wave of nuclear paranoia, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember that?
No, I don't. I mean, I was 1 year old in 1983.
So. Oh. I was 7.
Wow.
So I was fully versed
in fear.
On nuclear warfare. We did. That was one of the subjects of school.
It was, wasn't it?
Maths, English, PE.
Nuclear warfare.
Yes.
And then double chemistry.
Geography.
Geography, yeah. It's now The Day After. So it's weirdly it stars Steve Guttenberg and John Lithgow, but it's exactly the same as Threads. It follows the pockets of people in different areas, so you can see sort of the broad spectrum of what happens to society in a nuclear fallout. It's not about one person in particular.
It's what is the most interesting thing about talking about this film, and it's a good film, but Threads is. We talked about this before, I think it's been a recurring film, is the bleakest film I've ever seen, and one, the most harrowing film I've ever seen, I think.
Yes.
And last, stays with you, and is so powerful that it makes you actually want to go out and protest against any nuclear...
Yes.
It's that, I don't think a film's had that much of an effect on me as Threads.
No, it's so relevant as well as bleak, you know.
Mm.
People have mentioned The Road as being one of the bleakest films, but unnecessarily bleak films they've ever seen.
But Threads, I think, had a huge effect on people at the time, and everyone was talking about it.
Well, it's also done in a documentary style, Threads, whereas The Day After isn't. So it makes it even more sort of possible. And it doesn't relent either. Threads is as bleak as it would be. It doesn't then have its happy ending after.
That's what's interesting. I think the objective of The Day After, and it says at the end, we hope this would, you know, this
discourage, mutually assured destruction. Yeah,
but it still can't. Here comes Buddy.
Hello,
you've come
Buddy.
Back from his walk.
Yeah.
There's been no nuclear warfare. I can report. from Buddy's happy demeanour.
Yes, he does not. He's got all of his own hair.
Yeah. they even though it's trying to be a film to discourage nuclear warfare in quite a strong way, it still can't escape from the conventions of American
films. American films, it can't. It has to give it a happy ending. It has to show that hope will always out. And it has to show that it'll be all right in the end. And people are at their heart good, aren't they?
And even when their characters are suffering from radiation poisoning and essentially dying, it isn't as bleak as it can be.
No.
It's like it's a struggle within itself to not have, you know...
There's even a moment of a girl is going a bit stir-crazy in the shelter and runs outside, and Steve Guttenberg chases her. And it's the farmyard is all covered in ash. And it's almost shot like... It's quite beautiful, isn't it? It's almost like they're frolicking in blossoms.
Yes, and it looks like snow. A quiet snowy scene, except the fact that all the cattle are dead.
Yeah.
If they were sleeping covered in snow, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
You cannot escape talking about this film, Wibber, and someone's written up, Ben Hyten, I think, wrote on our Facebook page, just watch Threads. That's it, just watch Threads.
Yeah.
I think it's like one of those things with an advert for another film.
It is a fascinating thing just to get a sense for the intrinsic difference between American and British attitudes, though. I think it is quite endemic of the difference.
Yeah, I think that cynicism and the lack of positivity.
Yeah,
that is. Yeah,
as or you realism. Say, it's
yeah,
you know,
maybe. I think, I think if you go when I've been to the States, there has been a sort of a positive feel to it. I mean, yes. New York, Buffalo, Detroit, around there. Even those places have had some positivity.
Yes,
that's a part of American people's makeup that just is not there.
Yeah.
In the you say the cynicism of the British.
Yes, but as a result, I think for this, not all, but for this subject matter, I think Threads feels more real. It feels more appropriate. There's times when I really felt like I was watching a TV movie with The Day After.
Yeah, I think
because they both are TV movies.
Yeah, nuclear war is so brutal and random, and in the American version, you thought you sort of knew, they had picked out the main characters and they were survivors and they weren't. It felt like you were following arcs of different stories when you're in it. You're not in nuclear war. In the British one, you're just like, oh, you're just dead. That's what happens. You can be a fully formed character, but you're dead.
Yeah.
You can be this, and it's so shocking to have, because your brain's not used to having that suddenly just full stop put in the middle of a sentence almost.
Yeah.
That it does hit you harder. And the other characters you think aren't going to survive. Fred is great because it gives you real, they both show about half an hour or more than that of these normal lives.
Yes.
So you're just stuck in, especially in Threads, it feels like a normal programme. So the shock of nuclear war is all that more real. Yes.
I tell you what The Day After does that Threads didn't, that I thought was a haunting image, it was really good, was the scenes of pastoral domesticity and suburbia with their own rockets being launched into the sky, just these, because these silos are near their farms and near their homes.
Yeah.
You know, it's just part of the landscape. And all of these rockets heading over, and what they knew that meant inevitably.
Yeah.
But it's such a sort of slow image as well, of just like these plumes of smoke rising into the sky.
Buddy's doing some breakdancing.
Shall I?
That's what he would do if it was a nuclear war. Breakdancing. So watch both of them, but nonetheless, it is still a good film.
Absolutely, you know, Threads, if you're only going to watch one depressing nuclear fallout film, then watch Threads. But for completionist's sake, I think it's fascinating to watch The Day After as well. There's a really good quote from, I was reading, it's on the Wikipedia page, but from Carl Sagan. After the original broadcast of The Day After on American television, they actually had a debate about nuclear arms, with Carl Sagan on one side, and who's the other guy? William F. Buckley Jr., who was a conservative writer.
He was pro, but
he was pro, yeah. But it famously, famously, Sagan described the arms race in this way, which I just thought was great. Which was, imagine a room awash with gasoline, and there are two implacable enemies in that room. One of them has 9,000 matches, the other 7,000 matches. Each of them is concerned about who's ahead, who's stronger. And he's absolutely right. Like, there's a line in The Day After where I just went, blooming heck, where in the early warning system that's being manned, they just go, 300 warheads are heading our way. It's 300 of them. Mm. It is still a terrifying concept. I mean, it's
like biggest TV thing, isn't it?
Hey?
Who's got the biggest TV?
Yeah. I mean, does it matter? They're all showing crap.
That does matter, actually.
Does it?
I think, actually, that's a bit different.
Yeah, you haven't thought it through. quite.
It's a little bit similar, but it's not similar.
In a, you know, smaller and bigger way, but nothing much beyond that.
There's no death toll.
No. No.
Talking about death tolls.
Yes.
No, I'm
no, you can't segue that way.
We've got another 1 minute review.
We do. Thank you for sending in your 1 minute reviews. Please do send in more of them as well.
This isn't just a talking one, though.
What?
Someone's only written a blooming song.
Oh my God, the bar just got raised.
Yeah. This LT Jones, who is at Twitter, at Lord Tooth. And he's got a blog. Where he's blogging a novel, one chapter at a time. I'm doing this because he's just put so much effort into it, which is lordtooth.wordpress.com. So read his novel and follow him, because he's watched a film.
Good man. He's gone to see The Wolverine. So here is Lord Tooth's 1 minute review.
Sing it, baby.
Well, there's lots of fun with old Logan running around that there Japan. There's vicious hordes with samurai swords trying to fight that metal bone man. There's thrills and spills and planes and trains and excellent set pieces. But the problem with the film is the story's like trying to write a tale about Jesus. He's invulnerable and immortal. They have the manufactured Jeopardy. And it's not as if the Wolverine is known for witty repartee. Some of the dialogue is quite bad. There's a good sidekick and an evil prick and a morally dubious loner. Some great effects, a hint of sex, but we don't see Jackman's boner. There's a lack of resolution to the narrative arc and plot points in quite force. And spoiler alert, in the last 5 minutes, old Wolvie loses his claws. It quickly becomes predictable, like the fights on the bullet train Shinkansen. And without a doubt, my favourite parts are the bits with Famke Janssen. I give it 6 teeth.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Thank you very much. And did you say where you could send our reviews to?
No, I haven't yet. But you can send them to dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. Or if you want to commit less than doing a 1 minute recorded review, then why not just talk to us on our Facebook wall, /filmfandango. That's right, buddy. Or tweet us @filmfandango. Or if you would like to contribute towards our running costs, because we do this all for free, then go to filmfandango.co.uk. And for everyone who's already donated, thank you very much. It's all deeply appreciated.
That's about it, isn't it?
Buddy is still going crazy over in the corner.
He's doing some amazing breakdancing.
It's phenomenal. I didn't know a dog could rotate on just on its nose like that.
It's incredible to watch.
Yeah, if only we had a camera.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Keep watching the film.
Keep watching the film. Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.